Talking Frogs.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight is fixed. The poor stay poor. The rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
Everybody knows. But today, NSA's illegal domestic wiretapping, FBI's national security letters, state secrets privilege, TSA's 1 million plus no-fly list, persecution of government whistleblowers, perpetual wars, rendition and torture. Can you feel the water boiling?
Welcome to The Boiling Frogs. With Sibel Edmonds, I'm Peter B. Collins, and today we continue our series about America's police state. Philip Giraldi returns to our program. He's presently a journalist, and he also is involved with the Council for the National Interest. He served in the Central Intelligence Agency as a counterterrorism specialist and an intelligence officer. And he has visited with us before. Phil, thanks for joining us today.
Good to have me on. Thank you.
And Phil, I want to start with a recent piece that you wrote about the National Defense Authorization Act and the embedded portion of it, which is called the Homeland Battlefield Bill. And this was signed by the president on December 31st. And we have discussed this with other guests on the program here. But I'd like to get your thoughts about just how serious a threat this is to key constitutional rights that U.S. citizens presumably enjoy.
Well, initially, the people who were supporting this bill, or this part of the much bigger bill, the defense bill, were arguing that this is basically something that would only be used against foreign terrorists and only when they were caught in the act. Basically, what it does is it extends the war on terror, I hate to use that expression, but that's what they call it, to the entire world. And basically, it makes it so that anyone who is suspected of being tied to a terrorist group or even thinking of carrying out a terrorist action becomes suspect under this bill, and it can be arrested by the military authorities, not by the police. And once they're arrested by the military authorities, they're basically they have no civil liberties, no constitutional rights. So it's a mechanism for extending the war on terror to every citizen, every American citizen, every person in the world, and basically making them subject to the Pentagon.
And Phil, I'm looking at an article that you wrote that was published at antiwar.com. And I've been focused pretty seriously since early December on this bill and its impact. And I'll reference this in a moment, but I recently spoke with an attorney who is representing journalist and activist Chris Hedges in his suit to block the implementation of the Homeland Battlefield bill because it's unconstitutional. But in all these discussions, I never thought of myself as a potential target of this new legislation. And your article really brought it home for me. Today, I'm wearing a T-shirt that I purchased from the organizers of one of the Gaza flotillas. And it's got the audacity of hope on it. And you point out in your article that the NDAA would criminalize the actions that American citizens took last year and in preceding years to launch these seaborne efforts to break the Israeli blockade of Gaza. And you point out in the article that the American captain of the Audacity of Hope was held briefly by the Greeks, but that he was beyond the reach of American law. He broke no American laws by organizing and then attempting to steam this ship from Greece to Gaza. But under the new law, he could be detained as a material supporter of an alleged terrorist group, in this case, Hamas.
Yeah, that's right. This is an amazing kind of turn in terms of, you know, how the government is playing with this thing. The National Defense Authorization Act itself does not criminalize what this guy did, but what happens is that Congress has introduced a bill. It's House Resolution 3131 that basically calls on the State Department to declare that these people who were involved in the flotilla and all their supporters, that means people like me and you that maybe gave $5 or who wrote a letter to the editor supporting them or an article as I did, we would basically be people that if a U.S. federal bureaucrat were to declare that the flotilla supporters were terrorism supporters, we would all be terrorism supporters too. And we would be subject to the National Defense Authorization Act and possibly could be arrested by military authorities and put in a prison without any rights whatsoever.
Well, we could be held indefinitely without charge, and there are provisions to hold people without charge or trial on an indefinite basis. And we know at Guantanamo, there are more than 90 citizens of Yemen who have been cleared for release, who are not permitted to go home simply because of where they came from and an assertion by the Yemeni government that they are too dangerous to permit to return. And this is another case where we end up sacrificing our sovereignty by permitting third nations, in the case of Guantanamo, Yemen, in the case of flotillas, the nation of Israel is establishing who is subject to the language in this bill and in the House resolution that you described.
That's exactly right. I mean, this bill is nothing less than a bill to basically insulate Israel from the consequences of its actions in Gaza. And basically, the whole world views the Israeli enterprise against Gaza as criminal, as illegal. And these were American citizens on a boat sailing from Greece, essentially who were committing no crime in the United States. And now we have Congress attempting to label them as terrorists. And the consequences of being labeled as a terrorist are awful. And another thing I would point out that, you know, these Yemenis and the others are being held in Guantanamo. We've taken a lot of innocent people from various places in the Middle East and Asia, and we've turned them into terrorists. We have people now that were not guilty of any terrorist acts when we arrested them and sent them to Guantanamo, and now we have people that we don't know what to do with, because if they were not terrorists when we took them, they certainly are by now.
Well, that's a very important point, and we don't get rational about that. And the media feeds the fear-based themes and memes that these are the most dangerous people on earth, and you don't even want to think about them or know about them. Just trust your government. They're keeping these vermin locked up so that you don't have to lose sleep at night.
Well, that's the argument, isn't it? I mean, it's I lose a lot of sleep at night just because I'm thinking of what the government is doing, and it's just you know, we have this inexorable march towards taking away liberties in the United States because people are allegedly demanding security. But I don't see the American people out there demanding security. It's the government that's doing this. It's the government that's pushing this process. And it began, you know, you can argue it began a long, long time ago, but the fact is it really accelerated after 9/11 with George W. Bush and has gotten worse under the current regime. I mean, the current regime basically exercises state secrets privilege to stop there being any transparency in what it does, and is basically criminalizing more and more things and making more and more things coverable under terrorist legislation.
Right, Bill, and yet we have most people believing that, well, yes, our civil liberties are being eroded. However, you know, and we are moving towards the police state, but that we are far from being there already. And when people point out to all these, what you mentioned, what you have been writing about, what we have been covering here at Boiling Frogs Post, you know, the secrecy, the illegal eavesdropping on all Americans' communication, and NDAA, and the list goes on, and we say, this is a police state. Currently, we are there. Then we are being accused of being radical.
right. Yeah, that's the scary part about it. We're the ones that I think are basically sane on these issues, and we're and like poor Ron Paul. I mean, we're being accused of the ones that are being fringe elements, but in terms of traditional American values, I mean, we're the ones that are right. And I would throw one other thing into the hopper, the things that you've just suggested. I mean, this administration has killed American citizens overseas without any legal process.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is absolutely astonishing. There should have been rioting in the streets. There should have been every newspaper in America screaming about this, but it didn't happen.
Now, Phil, let me just stop you on that particular point, because I think it's really critical. And the slippery slope started with the execution of Osama bin Laden. And at that time, I raised concerns about Anwar al-Awlaki, who had been targeted but not yet killed. And the reaction in the United States has been ho-hum. I got into an argument at the Christmas dinner table with one of my brothers, who was just saying, nothing wrong with blowing up, he actually called him a raghead, who hates America. And let me just ask about your own cadre of colleagues. Are there any present or former CIA officers who have spoken up about the illegal or at least extra-legal process that was used to target and take out, as you point out, an American citizen, Anwar al-Awlaki?
Well, actually, there are quite a few former CIA people that have spoken out on this issue and others. I mean, I would cite Ray McGovern, I would cite the Christensens, I would cite Paul Pillar, Bob Baer, Michael Schur, been quite a few CIA people. The problem is, you know, people who are still part of the process and are in the system or are working as contractors, they can't say anything. But I know when I see these people and I talk to them, the sense of unease about all of this stuff and everything that's going on is very high. I very rarely encounter either a State Department or a CIA or even a Pentagon official lately who is very supportive of these practices. It's clear in most people's mind who think about these things how this is unconstitutional, it's illegal, it's immoral. A lot of this stuff is war crimes.
Actually, this brings another good point, Phil, because, you know, we spent years fighting under Bush-Cheney administration on retaliation and various retaliations against government whistleblowers. You know, I was the recipient of their state secrets privilege twice and all the associated gag orders. But during those years, no government whistleblower was pursued criminally. No government whistleblower was indicted. You know, we didn't have any of those. And I thought, well, it couldn't get worse than, you know, Bush-Cheney administration. Yet, with Obama administration, things have gotten worse by 3, 4, 10-fold. Now we have had the sixth government whistleblower being criminally pursued, persecuted, prosecuted, being indicted. And in fact, Obama is the only president who really has gone after government whistleblowers and actually implementing it, prosecuting them. I mean, with Dan Ellsberg in the 1970s, it basically got dropped out. And since Dan Ellsberg, we haven't had government whistleblowers facing serious espionage and criminal charges. So now we are looking, we the whistleblowers, and we say, well, this has gotten so much worse than what we had under Bush-Cheney administration. And the fact that it has put an end to government whistleblowing and truth-telling, I have an organization with more than 150 whistleblowers, national security government whistleblowers, and I've been getting calls for the past 1 year. People think they have information, the American citizens have the right to know about them, but no way under what Obama is doing they are going to dare to even go to Congress.
Yeah, that's right. I think they basically the Obama administration has sent the signal that it's going to go after people, and it doesn't really care whether any serious damage is being done or not. I mean, look at the Bradley Manning case. I mean, it's a question of going after this guy. Okay, if he broke rules that, you know, he had sworn to as a soldier and revealed information, then let's try him. Let's, you know, have a have let him have a decent defense in terms of what he did and why he did it, and let's get it over with. But this is this guy has been kept in limbo deliberately, and is, and by some accounts certainly has been subjected to something close to torture. And obviously, it's to send a signal. They're sending a signal more than they are actually doing anything.
Well, even more appalling for me is the fact, I mean, I'm all for accountability, but I see so many activists and independent, you know, journalists, semi-activists, who are so still busy pursuing Bush and Cheney administration. They want to go, and they keep pointing out all the stuff that Bush and Cheney did, that they are not looking at what's happening right now to all of us. I mean, that's the part that really exasperates me. You know, I don't want to name names here. I mean, these are some of them really good journalists, really good activists, but I go to their websites, I read their stuff, and they're living in the past. Yes, I'm all for accountability, but why give this guy a pass, and what's happening currently right now to us, to Americans, but also to all those people who are the recipients of our illegal, atrocious acts, and then go back to see what was happening in 2007, 2006.
Yeah, there's a tendency on the part of progressives, clearly, to give Obama a pass. And I think a lot of this is motivated by what they see of the Republican lineup to run against Obama this year. And that's because, you know, Gingrich and Romney and Rick Perry before he dropped out and Michelle Bachmann were pretty scary in a lot of the stuff that we're saying. So they there's a tendency to say, oh, no, they would be much, much worse than Obama, so we have to stick by Obama. But that's really not true, because I think Obama is a bit of a snake oil salesman, and we've been sold this bill of goods about how he's changed and how he's progressive and how he is a more liberal spirit. But in fact, as you've noted and we've been talking about, he actually has been, in terms of his actual deeds, he's much worse than George Bush was.
Well, and Phil and Sabell, one of the most powerful indictments of that very issue came from the satirist Stephen Colbert. And as he covered the president's signing of the NDAA with the signing statement that said he objected to certain provisions in it, he said, "Isn't that beautiful?" He said, "Standing on principle as you sign a bad law." And then he doubled down and he said, and President Obama has assured us that he will not use this authority to detain American citizens in the United States indefinitely without charge. And he said, isn't that an interesting threat? If you don't reelect Obama, then the immediately next president might use that power. And while this is done in a humorous vein, the underlying issues are very real.
Yeah, I think Colbert and Jon Stewart have been wonderful in some of their indictments of what's been going on, and you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, the problem is once you give government an authority, it's going to be used, first of all, and secondly, it's going to be expanded. That's the tendency of government, and especially when you're talking about law enforcement, security, that kind of thing, where there's always a tendency to push the envelope in terms of taking something that you've been given and making it go farther. And we could see that particularly, like, for example, as I'm sure you're both familiar with, the national security letters abused by the FBI.
Widely abused.
Widely abused. I mean, they started out as something that was only supposed to be used in terrorism cases, not necessarily with probable cause, but at least with some kind of verifiable suspicion. And these things were used in by the thousands in cases that had anything but to do with terrorism.
Well, and the director of the FBI was rewarded with a 2-year extension of his term without any debate or process. It's just breathtaking. Now, Phil, as we're speaking here in the last week of January, news has surfaced of a new indictment for violation of whistleblower laws, and it's a former colleague of yours at the CIA, John Kiriakou, K-I-R-I-A-K-O-U. He's the former head of the counterterrorism operations in Pakistan, and he is charged with being the source of the leak about the waterboarding of Abu Zubaydah. And I know some of the journalists for whom Kiriakou was a source and who reported on the waterboarding and the related issues of this alleged high-value detainee. And so I'd like to hear your comments on this, because we were told that when it comes to wrongdoing that occurred under Bush and Cheney, that Obama is looking forward, not backward. I find that a polite way of obstructing justice. But here we have a case that occurred well back in the Bush years, and the Obama legal team is just bringing charges now. I find this really bizarre.
Yeah, it's quite strange, and particularly as it seems, in fact, that some of the things that Kiriakou revealed were not true. And so, you know, I think we have a case here of somebody who saw an opportunity to do a little self-promotion, to write a book, to do a number of things. And they are now trying, he didn't commit any criminal acts as a CIA officer, but other people who did commit criminal acts, like torture, are being, you know, given basically a pass by the Obama administration. But this guy who didn't do anything wrong, and in fact seems to even have some of his facts a bit wrong, is being nailed on issues that are essentially peripheral. I mean, they're accusing him of revealing the name of a CIA officer undercover, which is a serious thing, but it kind of depends on who the guy was, has his cover been blown before, and so on and so forth. And then the other thing was this magic box business. Now, the magic box is nothing more than the ability of the United States to intercept phone calls and cell phones and things, which everybody has known for a long time. It was a capability that the U.S. government has. So there's no secret there. They basically are looking for something to hang this guy with. And again, I think it's largely, let's send the signal. We are prepared to go all the way, even if you did nothing or you did something that most people would regard as a misdemeanor, and we're going to get you.
Well, and Phil, what I believe is interesting here, and there's a little bit of speculation here on my part, but there are, Kiriakou is accused of disclosing the identity of two CIA agents. One is named Deuce Martinez, the other is not. And I believe that Boiling Frogs Post revealed her identity last year in the middle of a whole controversy over some individuals who were publishing new information about intelligence that was received before 9/11 but ignored. And so this, you know, has all kinds of very interesting issues for us here.
Sure, yeah. It opens the door for them to go after you. The thing is, you know, in the real world, you would do a damage assessment to say, well, was there any damage done by this event? And of course, since what we're talking about here took place some years ago, it seems that, you know, why are they bringing it up now? Why are they doing it now? And it occurs to me that there's a political objective here, and the political objective is really what we're talking about. The political objective is to start punishing people, and we're talking about police state and its broader implications, and this is one of the things police states do.
And you've been in the business long enough. The most prominent police state that has occurred in my lifetime was in the Soviet Union, the KGB, the re-education camps, the Gulag, the total control over information. There was no Pravda in Izvestia and no Izvestia in Pravda. And for people who don't understand that, there's no news in
right.
The truth, and there's no truth in the news.
Right.
So what is the parallel? What is an appropriate characterization, if you can, of the level of police state that we are currently experiencing?
Well, as I say, I think a lot of the things we're seeing are things that are being done to establish the government's authority. And, in the past, I think a lot of, there were, CIA people left and they wrote books and they did this and they did that. Nobody ever touched them. And now all of a sudden we find a guy who, as I say, kind of didn't even get his facts quite straight, said some interesting things and may have inadvertently revealed a couple of things along the way. They're suddenly going after him hardball. And his wife, of course, it was in the paper today, that his wife even was forced to resign from CIA as a result of this. So it's they're trying to change the nature of the game, and they're trying to shut down whistleblowers. They're trying to shut down people who are talking about things that they consider to be unpleasant. And certainly the U.S. government record over the last 10 years in terms of torture and everything else is more than unpleasant. And I think it's time we had a little transparency on these issues and that the you got to blame the media. The media hasn't gone after this stuff, and it's because the media is in cahoots on all of it.
And Phil, what is your take on the prosecution of CIA officers in Italy for the case in Milan, where there were 25 Americans involved in a scheme to snatch Abu Omar, an Egyptian, who was raising money for jihad. He's not a choir boy or any kind of a totally innocent person. But this case was rife with missteps and American arrogance. And let me just give you two examples. One is that we initially were working with the Italians to monitor this guy, and they wanted to continue the monitoring in order to see if he would lead them to higher officials or bigger fish. And secondly, it was almost a Keystone Cops episode. They grabbed this guy midday on the streets of Milan using a van, and everybody is packing cell phones that were very easy for the Italian prosecutor to identify and locate the exact positions throughout the entire operation. And he even was able to use the cell phones to track them to the Aviano Air Base, which is where they took Abu Omar for rendition to Egypt, where he was tortured. And so I just like your thoughts on that case, because Italy did try and convict the Americans in absentia. We did not cooperate. And I believe that one of the officials, CIA members, lost a piece of property that he had bought for retirement in Italy. But that was the extent of any accountability for this sideways operation.
Well, I mean, the whole thing was Keystone's cops. It was, far beyond the cell phones. They were making calls back home on the cell phones, so the Italian investigators were able to identify where they lived and what their real names were. They were also claiming frequent flyer miles, hotel credits in their true names, even though they were traveling on passports that gave them different names. It was just an awful operation for a guy who basically was kind of low level.
Mm-hmm.
The Italians, however, did cooperate with almost every step of the way with this thing. They were trying to steer it in another direction, but when the judge in Milan indicted the people involved, he also indicted five Italian intelligence officers. So they were involved to a certain extent, but the whole thing was ridiculous. I mean, my feeling on this is if this guy was doing Abu Omar was doing something illegal, then you arrest him and you try him in a civilian court. And if he's guilty, you convict him and you send him to jail. This whole process of using 25 people running around, Americans running around the streets of Milan and Venice, I guess Venice was a cover destination. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but
and they were all staying in $500 a night hotels.
$500 a night hotels. Boy.
Yeah, and so the whole thing becomes like a running joke, and yet this guy, if he was guilty of a crime, you convict him and you send him to jail, and you don't export him to another country where he's going to be tortured. I mean, the whole mental process that leads to this kind of thing is ridiculous. It's one would think that it's a violation of every principle that the United States used to stand for, but I guess we don't stand for them anymore.
Phil, this week the Supreme Court, in two decisions that were ultimately unanimous in effect, they rejected a government assertion that law enforcement officials, including the FBI, can put a GPS monitor on somebody's vehicle without an appropriate court order. And there's some wiggle room in the decisions, but ultimately it seems that the Chief Justice was shocked in the oral arguments a few months ago when he asked the question, "You mean you could put one of these on my car?" And it was that self-interest that seemed to propel a firm stand for the Fourth Amendment. And I'm happy to see it. At the same time, it is a minor victory, as we see so many rights, including those enshrined in the Fourth Amendment, are really being flushed down the drain.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was kind of involved in that case because I was part of the Constitution Project here in Washington, and we wrote a number of position papers demanding that the judiciary come up with some way of dealing with electronic intrusion in our lives. I don't know if you noted today in the paper, Google is going to start keeping detailed records of everything that people like you or me who have a Google account or even use Google, what we do, where we go, and what we write about.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this electronic intrusion is extremely dangerous, and the GPS thing, it sounds innocuous, but actually, if they attach a GPS unit to your car and hook it up to a computer, it basically provides a detailed account of where you go every day and what you're doing. The question of whether they can do the same thing in your home still seems to be up in the air, in that the home is generally regarded as an area where you do need a search warrant. But certainly the police are even going in that direction. And another thing that they've been working on is they have these download devices. If you're pulled over for a speeding offense, you got a cell phone, they can ask you for your cell phone. If you give them your cell phone, they can download who you've been calling and what you've been doing for the last month.
Mm-hmm.
It's the ability of the authorities to exploit commercially developed electronic intrusion methods and commercially available techniques is amazing. And there has to be some kind of legal framework to stop this from becoming another tool of government to get into every person's life.
Well, and Phil, they now have the capability with dashboard-mounted video mm-hmm. cameras
yep.
to get a picture of your license plate and, quote-unquote, run that plate without the officer having to get on the radio and say, we got a Chevy up in front with a license plate, yada, yada, yada. It's just done seamlessly, and up on the screen would pop registrations late, tailpipes not approved, or whatever. And we learned recently through an expose conducted here by a California newspaper that there is a commercial business that does the same thing. They have license plate cameras all over the place, and they are tracking individuals for private clients.
Yeah,
this can be widely abused.
There was a test project in Nashville, I believe it was, where they mounted a highly sophisticated version of these same cameras in police cars. They don't even have to stop. They drive down the street, and the camera clicks in on every license plate parked on the street, and then provides, you know, there's an arrest warrant out on this guy, this guy was involved in this, that, and the other thing, complete personal histories and everything, and police records. I mean, it's just astonishing, and we're heading into a brave new world where all this stuff is going to be compiling. You know, you remember when the Pentagon back in 2003 was the Total Awareness Program? Do you remember that?
TIA, Total Information
Total
Awareness.
Total Information. Yeah, I mm-hmm. got it wrong. But anyway, yeah, the idea was to basically collect all available information from public and private databases on everybody. And that's where we're heading.
Well, and one of the things they did, that project was renamed and they dumped John Poindexter, but the data mining continued.
Right.
And in order to enlist the phone companies also in the domestic wiretapping schemes, they went and bought the records from the phone companies. They paid cash for the data that the phone company said is ours and that they would protect.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So the ability to data mine and to cross-tabulate the intercepted phone calls and emails with police records, credit card records, GPS tracking, the devices we use to pay a toll when we cross a bridge. All of those provide data points that can be easily compiled, and we know that they have the capability. We frankly only see some cases where it's obviously being used.
Yeah. In fact, there's a Silicon Valley company now, which is, I read an article a couple weeks ago, which basically is creating very sophisticated linkages so that all these databases basically come together in real time. I mean, it happens instantly. and the government is funding these this research and this development project, and it's going to be applied to Pentagon databases, CIA databases, FBI databases, NSA databases. Everything comes together instantly.
Well, Bill, this is where we are. Our listeners, our readers, us, we've been saying, okay, we know all about these things, and yes, we have been a police state. We are living under a police state. But what should we be doing about it? Because, people say educate, you inform others, and we are at it. We are doing it. But as far as taking action, you know, doing something, truly resisting, those questions go, where do we go? What do we tell people? What would we ask them to do? Because, you know, admit it, writing some petition to Congress, you know, 99.9% of those guys and women, they're corrupt. You know, outside Ron Paul, Rand Paul, and a few others, we don't really have true representatives in there. So these writing petitions think, you know, that's not going to do anything good. When people ask me and say, Phil, what should we be doing? How do we really resist? And how do we take actions? What kind of actions do we take? What would you tell them?
Well, I would tell them two things. I would say, first of all, even though the petitions and calling congressmen and everything like that have been shown to be fairly ineffective, the reality is that almost any congressman, if he gets, they you know how they work, they have thresholds. And if they get like 25 calls on an issue, they actually respond. If they get 50 calls on an issue, they pay attention to it, and they actually sit down and talk with their staffers about what this all means and so on and so forth. So putting pressure on Congress and putting pressure on the judiciary, which is another area to be working on, has a certain effectiveness, and it shouldn't be abandoned. We should all do it. I write to my congressman, even though here in Virginia they're a total waste of space. But the fact is that I've got to keep doing it. We've got to keep doing it, and I encourage everybody I know to do it. And so that's the first thing. Now, the second thing is to do what you two are doing and what I do, which is basically we have to educate the public, because the only way this is ever going to change is going to be from the bottom up. We have to be writing about these issues. We have to be talking about these issues. We have to get out in their faces on these issues. I, for example, personally go out and I talk to Tea Party people. And I explained to them, look, you're on one side, you're looking at your liberties vanishing, and you're aware that that's happening. On the other side, you're not looking at the police state, which is emerging, that is forcing all this stuff to happen. And they kind of get it. And I'm sure there are other parallels for in terms of other groups and other bodies that we can get in front of, civic organizations, even business organizations. I mean, this is serious stuff, and it's up to us for our kids and our grandkids and the future generations to try to turn this around. And I think that's the only thing we can do to do it.
Well, and Phil, I'm glad to hear you reaching out to Tea Party members, because really one of the reasons their call for small governments sounds hollow to me is that they don't address these clear incursions into our constitutional rights. And I'm not prepared to support Ron Paul for president, but I cheer when I watch these incredible wrestling matches called presidential debates, where he pipes up and challenges the notion that he explicitly opposed the NDAA, and he challenges a lot of the policy initiatives that could lead, for example, to war with Iran. And I'd like to go there next, because you have a great deal of expertise on the Middle East. And we're seesawing right now in terms of the ratcheting up of tensions with Iran, the tightening of sanctions, their threat to close the Strait of Hormuz. But first, I want to get just a quick characterization from you on the case that surfaced last summer of this man, Arbabsiar, an Iranian-American in Texas, a used car dealer who allegedly hooked up with a drug cartel from Mexico, only it was a DEA informant, and claimed that he was going to kill the Saudi ambassador to Washington. I found that whole thing totally unbelievable, and yet it is now reported in the media as a proven fact.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing. And the other amazing thing about the media coverage of it is that you haven't heard anything about it since it came down. and accept that occasionally it's cited as a proven fact. The fact is that I don't know a single intelligence officer who worked in the Middle East who believes the story.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say they don't believe the story, they don't believe any of the story. And they think it's all highly improbable. And the suspicion is that it's one of these entrapment cases where the U.S. government gets somebody and they insert an informant, and the informant steers the operation in a certain direction, and then they make it look like something that it's not. And everybody I know, as I say, that knows anything about operations in that part of the world agrees with that judgment. I don't know a single person who believes that it's credible.
Now, earlier in our conversation, you referenced Ray McGovern, a former CIA officer. He recently published a lengthy analysis of the media coverage, particularly the New York Times coverage, of the emerging conflict with Iran. And despite the fact that Secretary of Defense Panetta and the Defense Secretary in Israel, Ehud Barak, a former prime minister, both say that Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon and is not likely to get one soon, the media is reporting this as, again, almost an established fact.
Yeah, they're basically, they're saying that, what it is essentially is that all these people are saying, yeah, well, we don't know about it for sure, but Iran has to have a secret program because they're bad people. That really doesn't hold water. I mean, the fact is Iran's nuclear program is inspected regularly by the United Nations. There are television cameras, monitors in the labs and in the places where they work. There's been no diversion of enriched uranium there, and the CIA and everybody else in the intelligence community agrees that Iran has not made the political decision to go towards a nuclear weapon. Yet the media persists in saying that yes, Iran is going for a nuclear weapon. I did a
so Phil, is this just a sequel of a bad movie called Evildoers with WMD?
Yeah, it is a sequel. It's exactly the same formula that we saw with Iraq, and they're playing exactly the same game, and it's exactly the same people. It's people at the Weekly Standard, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post editorial page, and they're all playing the same song, and it's essentially that these people believe they're doing it because they're doing it on behalf of Israel in many cases. Among the Republican presidential candidates, they're doing the same thing. They're playing the Israeli card because they feel it's something that appeals to the party base, and mm-hmm. it's something they have to do. And you know, this is ridiculous. I mean, Israel is quite capable of defending itself.
And where do you see this leading, Phil? Should we be concerned? Because I worry that we have taken the tensions to such a high level that a single mistake, even if we're trying to rescue another Iranian fishing boat, could lead to an international conflict of significant proportions.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. I don't think there's anybody in the White House or in Israel or even in Iran that really wants to start a war. I mean, there might be some nutcases, but basically the people who are making decisions, who have their hands on the levers of power, I don't think are wanting to go in that direction. But We've cranked up the tension so high with what have to be considered acts of war, these sanctions and the sanctions that are going to kick in at the end of this month on their oil sales or their oil imports, their gasoline imports. These are acts of war, and the tension is so high that you can have a really minor incident somewhere in the Persian Gulf that will escalate into a major war, and that's the danger here.
Philip Giraldi, I know your time is limited, so thank you for spending time with us today. We've covered a lot of important issues, and I thank you for your frankness and clarity.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Phil.
Thanks.
Give me absolute control over every living soul, and I'm standing, baby. That's an order. Take the only tree that's left and sit out it up the hole in your culture. Give me a bank of burning wall. Give me a star and a
Chevra. It is murder.
Leo Cohen and the future. The future. Well, that depends on us. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back soon with more Boiling Frogs interviews.